سلام کعبه دلها حسین جان، سلام شمع ما فلها حسین جانم،
حسین جانم حسین جانم حسین جان.
سلام علیکم و رحمت الله. سلام علیکم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. It's a pleasure as always to be with you brothers and sisters. It's always a pleasure to be here in Houston. And for this first lecture, it's a bit different to the lectures I usually give, so I do apologize if you've come for that genre of lectures. This is something different today, and there's a reason why I've chosen this theme. If we look closely at our lifestyle and the actions that we do, more or less everyone, to some degree, more or less, they are contaminated with certain doctrinal beliefs or contaminated with executing certain actions which are not necessarily Islamic, but we attribute them to an Islamic nature. And this is something which, as I say, affects most people, if not all. And since everyone is afflicted with this illness, if we do encounter people who are contaminated with ex-belief or ex-ritual, and they attribute ex-belief or ritual to Islam when it has nothing to do with true Muhammadan Islam, if we do encounter such people, the first thing that we have to firmly dictate to ourselves is that we aren't necessarily better than them. It's a very important lesson. Just because in a certain minor belief or a certain action that they do, which isn't Islamic, but they do it and they attribute it to Islam without any proof, just because you encounter someone doing such a thing, it doesn't mean you're better than them. They may be better than you, and it's no good to judge anyway. But it's important that the beliefs that we have and the beliefs that we incorporate in ourselves, the actions that we do, it's important that they're supported by the proper proof. If you don't support your doctrine rationally, you may fall into a whole variety of different beliefs. For example, without knowing and very unintentionally, you may be on a par with a Hindu who believes in reincarnation if you haven't properly sorted out and properly proved certain doctrines in Islam. And many people actually, since all they know of Islam is what their fathers told them, and they accept it blindly, they're no different in one or two aspects of belief, even though they're Muslim, they're no different to Hindus. And they will be resurrected as Hindus, to some degree. So it's important. In relation to actions too, there are many actions that we do and we attribute it to Islam, but the source and root of those actions or mutually exclusive to Islam. And I've decided to choose one of those actions with your permission tonight. And I'll only be speaking about this issue tonight. Tomorrow there'll be different issues, inshallah. But since this issue has been wrongly understood, those who are for it, they don't know why. Those who are against it, they don't know why. And when I see these kind of reactions amongst the people, I thought, at least let's go through it academically, analyzing it carefully, and let's see what the problem exactly is. I'm not here, though, to push you in a particular direction, and inshallah, that will be evident during this talk. That you have to decide yourself. But there are certain factors that we have to go through before we want to attribute it to Islam, though. That much I can interfere, but not in relation to the final choice. And I'll be speaking with a partial, unbiasedly. But as I say, I'll go through this one particular action in detail, but just because you don't do it, and others do it, and you think it's wrong that others do it, it doesn't make you a better person than the other. As long as you don't fall in that ethical trap. Because be rest assured, everyone, they fall in the same trap, but on other issues, be it in their belief or in their actions. Now, what is that action which I want to open up, inshallah, tonight? And that is tatbih, or qamizani, as they say. A form of self-flagellation or self-injury leading to the shedding of one's blood after striking the head, for example, with a metallic object. In the name and honor and sanctity of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam. That's the action. This needs explaining, though. If you want to do it, you have to know why you're doing it. And if you don't accept it, you have to understand why you don't accept it. If you ask the common lay Muslim that, why do you do qamizani? If you ask them, two common answers are given. One is, they say, Lady Zainab alayhi salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Muhammad. She did it. When after Ashura, in her mahmil is a wooden carriage they would put on the camels, that people can sit in. You may have also seen them on elephants, but in the Arabian Peninsula 1400 years ago, it was usually with camels, not elephants. And they say she was in the wooden carriage, the mahmil, and then she hit her head onto the wooden bar of the carriage in sorrow for what happened to Imam Hussein alayhi salam and what happened in Karbala. Okay, so that's one very popular answer you may encounter. Now, in Islam, before something qualifies as proof, either the Quran has to refer to it for it to be proof. And if there's no reference to it in the Quran, it has to fall into one of three categories. Either qawlul ma'soom, the words of a ma'soom. By ma'soom, we mean the 14 ma'soomi. Either it has to be one of the wording of the ma'soomin, which says this action is halal or haram, wajib or haram, or it has to be the action of a ma'soom before a given action is qualified as proof, or it has to be taqreer al-ma'soom, where something, an action, happened in the presence of a ma'soom and the ma'soom was silent, albeit he aware of that action, and this silence indicates a tacit approval of what happened in his presence, and therefore makes that action at least permissible. In relation to qawlul ma'soom, the wording, the words of the ma'soom, for example, Imam Ridha alayhi salam, for example, he said to one of the companions called Di'bil, he said, Di'bil, recite poetry praising the Ahlul Bayt. And that's why poetry is okay. Qawlul ma'soom, the Imam said so. That's an example of a textual hadith where the Imam says something. Fi'lul ma'soom is when the narrator says, I saw the Imam. The narrator doesn't say, I heard the Imam say. The narrator says, I saw the Imam do such and such an action. And if the narrator is authentic and so on and so forth, that action is proof, constitutes proof. For example, when the name of the 12th Imam was mentioned, in the presence of Imam Reza alayhi salam, he put his hand on his head like that. And that's why we do it. It's an action. Do we have proof for this action? Yes. Imam Ridha used to do it. That's fi'lul imam. The first was qawlul imam, where the imam said, poetry is okay, do it. Fi'lul imam, the imam did something, and reliable narrators narrated it. Taqreerul imam is when, for example, the imam is silent before an action that is done in his presence, and that silence indicates the imam's approval. There are exceptions, like when he is in taqiyya, but they're exceptions and they have to be proved from the context of the tradition. An example though of this is that after Ashura, many of the Hashemites in Bani Hashim, they did wear black in sorrow for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Sajjad was there. He saw the wearing of black. He was silent, implying his approval of wearing black in sorrow for Imam Hussein. That's an example of taqreerul ma'soom. And that's why we wear black. But when it comes to qanmizani and tatbir, here, do we have qawlul ma'soom? Most definitively not. There is no tradition where the imam says do qanmizani. Do we have fi'lul ma'soom? Here we're limiting the ma'soom to 14 ma'soomin. Lady Zainab, although she is ma'soom to a degree, but not to that degree. Infallibility has degrees. Even amongst the prophets, they're all infallible, but there are degrees to infallibility. Even amongst the messengers, they're all infallible, but there are degrees to the infallibility, even amongst the messengers. Do we have the action of a ma'soom doing qanmizani? We say no, because Lady Zainab, what isn't one of the ma'soomin? And was this done in the presence of a ma'soom and the ma'soom said nothing? Here we also say no. So why are we doing it? So there's no verse and there's no tradition. Allama Majlisi, in Biharul Anwar, Allama Majlisi was one of the great ulama throughout the history of Islam. And he compiled the 110 volumes of Biharul Anwar. He was a scholar 4 or 5 centuries ago. He compiled it with a team. He didn't do it all himself. And there may have been 100, 200 people. And there, in Biharul Anwar, he compiled all the traditions that he could. Even the weak traditions, he would compile. Now you may say, why did he compile the weak traditions? And that's not necessarily problematic. It's good, actually, sometimes. There are many things we believe in which don't have strong, authentic traditions, but it has so many weak traditions that excessive number of weak traditions leads to our certainty in relation to that belief. For example, in Raj'at, we all believe in Raj'at. And he brings more than 500 traditions. Most of them are weak, if not all. But when you see 500 of them, you acquire certainty.